Welcome to episode 112 of Coffee and Co-Read, your source for all things literary, with Kristen
and Catherine, where we believe there's nothing better than a hot coffee and an awesome book. Join us for our virtual book club, where we take one book a month and dive into all of the drama, adventure, and romance we can find. Hey, Kristen.
Hi, Catherine.
So, we decided that this week we would talk about demons and devils in books and media and that kind of thing, and how they're portrayed, because luckily for our heroine in this book, the demons and princes of hell are pretty hot. So yeah, they're what you would, I guess, hope for if you were going to hell.
Yes.
But that's not how demons are always portrayed, in other books, but yeah. So do you read many demon devil books, Kristen?
Yes. Well, like I sort of said during book one, is I found that this really similar to that book series that I read called Vampire Girl by, Karpov and Kinraid, I think. Yeah, anyway, so I did find that the princes of hell in that book series were the same. Very handsome, like, sexually proficient, you know. But they, I don't know how to explain this properly. A bit crueler.
Yeah.
Whereas I find at least one of the demons in this book, like our main prince of hell, Wrath, he likes to come across as cruel, but I don't think...
Don't buy it.
Yeah. Like, he seems like a decent person. Yeah. Especially after, like, saving her life last week. Like, you know, so I don't think that his, like... Prince of Hellness is really, he's not an awful guy.
No, that I get that.
So, anyway, so I have read, in one of my favorite book series, it's a bit older, the Bitten series by Kelly Armstrong. She develops this whole, like, Women of the Otherworld series, and, like, there are all kinds of supernatural creatures, demons being one, primarily half demons, like people that are half demon, half human. But the demons themselves are terrible, like sort of monstrous, evil, like can't make ethical and moral choices because they live in hell. So it's a little bit, I feel like maybe more stereotypical in demon, demonology, we'll say. But yeah, I just like, I really like all the different takes on like reading different sort of takes on demons, because like they're a made up entity. Yeah. So like I enjoy when people do something different with it.
I like, well, and even in this series, like we haven't seen many other demons. I guess we saw the Viper demon is a different kind. So like they aren't all handsome men, which is sad. But it's like the Mortal Instruments series. There's a bunch of different kind of demons in that world. And like in the later books of that original, not, I guess, the later books of the Mortal Instruments series, like, there is a demon that is a person, but that is, like, the minority. Like, there's rarely people. They're usually monsters looking.
Yeah.
Which I like, too. I like, when there's variety, I like it a lot. But, like, I also like Supernatural, the show that we love. their demon take is just like they take over anybody's body kind of thing, which is like terrifying, but I love that take too. And you're kind of like, well, what if they don't have a host, what are they, just
smoky
and just like uncontained, like what do they do? So yeah, I love reading different takes on demons and like the way that people write them, for sure.
Yeah,
I also like when, like, the demons and the devils in stories just have human characteristics, and you're Like, in this one, I think it might even be this week, Rath says, like, him and his brothers aren't good or bad, they just are. And I kind of like that, like, you would think they would just be evil, but I like that there's, like, dynamic to it, and it's kind of like humans, like, humans aren't good or evil, they have, like, facets, whatever.
But I think that that sort of stems from, like, so they're the princes of hell, and they each sort of, like, they're each atoned to a particular sin. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it just sort of harkens back to, like, well, humans were not sinful until the original sin, you know, that whore Eve, like, how dare she? Mm-hmm. But you know what I mean? So, like, humans are now full of sin, so like it would make sense that they, princes of hell, like the embodiment of those sins, would also have human like mm-hmm. traits and characteristics, yeah. because that's where sin comes from. I'm saying all of this in air quotes because, you know,
we're not,
that's the mythology of it, right? Type. Like, yeah, but like, so yeah, it's just, it makes sense for them to be sort of human-y.
Yeah.
And like, and but also like, oh, this is going to be awful. I don't necessarily think that the sins on their own are inherently bad either.
No. They're just...
You know what I mean?
Most,
like,
of them are just
a little
feelings.
Bit of
like you should have a wider range of feelings. It's based on what you do with your feelings that like issues come into play. But like,
yeah,
you can be wrathful or feel like envy, feel
angry,
feel lust, like feel pride. You should feel pride in things, like all of these things. It's only a sin again, in quotations. Like when you act badly on it, I guess.
Yeah. When you do bad things for the sake of that feeling. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Good point.
Like robbing a bank because you're greedy is not the best idea.
Yeah.
Having another piece of cake because you're greedy.
Delicious,
fine.
Even.
Have another piece of cake. Yeah. So, yeah, I really like that that's where we are with it. And like, I enjoy that he does say that, like, that they just are, because that is sort of the nature of humanity. Like, we just are. It's just what we do with our actions that sway us one way or the other. We've gone philosophical.
We have. And it happens sometimes, but we didn't expect to get here today.
We did not. It's not where I foresaw us. When we started that conversation.
No.
But it's fine. It's fine.
Lovely.
Okay, so today is week 3 of Kingdom of the Wicked by Carrie Maniscalco, and we are reading chapters 24 to 36 today. So, last week, a bunch of things happened. Emilia... she summoned Rath, trapped him in a circle, realized he was a prince of hell, didn't let him out, didn't take his blood oath thing that he offered, went to see Greed, found out that there's a viper demon below the cathedral, and that's where her sister's amulet is, so she needs to go get it, and she almost dies in the process, so Rath does something, I think, gets married, in order to save her life.
Yeah.
And she traps him again, accidentally, but then she lets him out and they decide to work together. And they end up back at the monastery where they found Vittoria's body, And she figures out that his dagger that she's in possession of, she figures out that it can kill him. So she threatens him with it. And that's where we left off last week.
She kind of assumes it.
Yes.
Yeah.
She does, because apparently he keeps looking at it and tracks it whenever she's moving. So she assumes that he's got a weakness, like, and that's why he keeps tracking it. Has nothing to do with him looking at her or tracking her. It's not her he wants, it's the dagger.
Of course. Of course.
Of course it is. Yes. So she's like threatening him with a dagger and like has it pointed at him and like right up against him. And they get like real close. It's like one of those moments where like a Pride and Prejudice moment where like, I loathe you.
Oh my God.
I loathe you. And they get real close.
In the 2025.
Like their faces are real close.
2025. Jesus. I wish there was a 2025 one coming out. I love all of them. But in the 2005 one, after his first proposal in the rain, and they're gonna kiss, and you're like,
yes,
this didn't happen in the book, they're but like, I love it so much.
Yeah. They're like breathing in each other's air. They're so close. And like, you could tell she's like looking at his lips. She wants to kiss him bad, even though he just insulted her entire family. Maybe, you know. Anyway, doesn't matter.
We love it.
So they're like really close up and like it's like they're almost gonna kiss, but then Rath asks her like, what's wrong? Rath tells her like that she's wrong, like a dagger to his heart is not gonna kill him. And she then is like, well, shit, backs up again. And asks about the curse, because there's a curse, and she doesn't know what it's about. And all of a sudden, they hear a noise from outside the door. And Rath actually backs into her, so she's up against the wall, and he's in front of her. So, like, he's totally protecting her. Of course. Even though he's super annoyed with her, but still.
We love it.
She sort of, like, tells Rath, like, get away. And he... It's Antonio comes in, and that's when she sort of says, oh, he's fine, he's my friend, and like gets him to move out of in front of her. And Antonio looks at her and is like, oh, like happy to see her, until he notices Rath, and then he looks a little unsettled and is like, who's that?
Why did you bring a boy here? What the hell is going on?
Let's not insult him. A man.
Yeah.
Why did you bring a man here?
That's true.
So he asks, like, is everything okay? And apparently Rath looks at him in a way that sends goosebumps over her body. Because, like, he looks real, like, backup dude. And it's hot.
So,
yeah. So she introduces him as her friend, Samael. I don't actually know how to say that.
Your Samuel? Guess is better than mine.
I don't know, man. S-A-M-A-E-L. Sam.
Sam. This is Sam.
So Rath, like, cuts in then that he wants to get to know Antonio better. Since he's obviously such a good friend of his Emilia.
I love it, but I'm also like, you're gonna ruin her fucking life. Like, what are you thinking?
I'm okay with it. Anyway, so they just make an excuse that they were lighting a candle for Victoria, and like, Sam is a good friend from like a different city and is just coming in to... Because they're all grieving. And she was like, just give us a few minutes and we'll be on our way. So Antonio's like, okay. Rath then, like, once they're alone, hates the name Sam. And says, like, he's like, don't call me that ever again.
Yeah, it seems like an overreaction. And I don't know if it comes up again, but I'm assuming it does because of the face you just made.
Yeah. So she picked that name because that Samuel, I don't know, was a prince of Rome and an angel of death. So she just like sort of said, oh, that's kind of him. Like he is a fallen angel because he's a prince of hell. Mm-hmm. Right. So, and she was actually thinking earlier about like what sins he committed to cause him to fall from heaven. Like she wonders what he did in heaven to make him fall, but she doesn't ask. He then asks if her and Antonio have ever shared a bed before. And she tells him none of his beeswax.
Which is, I love it. She could easily be like,
I do too.
He's a brother. Obviously not. But she's like, nope. None of your business.
It's like, I don't have to tell you. Yeah, she says business. She doesn't say beeswax. I just like to say beeswax.
That's fair.
So she, like, thinks back to before he took his vows. She actually thought he was gearing up to ask her out. And, like, he would walk her home and stick around outside of her door and, like, do the key jingle thing. Did you ever see that movie Hitch with Will Smith in it?
I think so.
And Ava Mendez?
But ages and ages
ago. And it's one of the things that sticks in my mind. So, like, Will Smith is giving Kevin James like advice and says like, if a girl's doing that thing in front of her door where she's jingling your keys and not moving to like go in and unlock her door and say goodbye right away, she wants you to kiss her. So it sort of reminds me of that. Yeah. Like he's like hanging out by the door, not immediately going away. Mm-hmm. And, like, he'd try and talk to her about books and all this sort of thing. So, like, she really thought he was working up the nerve to kiss her.
Which is why I'm like,
and then
there has to be more to this. Do we get more of this? Do we figure it out? Kind of? No?
No.
Okay.
Not really. If you're attached to Antonio, he's not as prevalent.
Yeah.
In the other books.
That's fair.
I finished the series, by the way.
I haven't even finished this book. So that's why we're jumping around these secrets.
I need you to read the rest, though, so that I can freely talk about it.
No, it's probably not going to be till we do them on the podcast.
I hate it.
Sorry.
Anyway, so she tries to change the subject, but he tells her, like, obviously her pulse is pounding the same way Antonio's was when Wrath claimed her as his. And he was like, obviously it's really weird that he's jealous, like, considering he's a man of God. So Wrath can obviously read emotions and, like, hear heartbeats and all that jazz. So, like,
well, you also assume there's probably, like, there is jealousy and envy, but there's also probably some anger there. So that specifically calls to him.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, so he essentially tells her that Antonio is jealous of her being in the room with this man. And obviously, like, I'm sure that is, I don't know if that would be comforting to hear or not.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, oh, I wasn't reading the signals wrong.
Yeah.
But now he's a brother, so it's a moot point.
And, like, I guess she already kind of knew it, because they, like, childhood loves kind of thing. But, and she did the truth spell. but, yeah, I think I'd be annoyed. I'd be like, then why did he choose this over me? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Anyway, she just wants to, like, forget about that. So she asks him, like, what's the next plan? What's the next step? Because realistically, this was their only idea, to come here and look for clues. Now what? And he says, like, the next plan is to meet with the next potential bride. That's the plan. And she's annoyed because he promised he when she agreed to work with him, she was like, I don't want you to, like, I don't want you chasing after the brides anymore. Mm-hmm. I don't want you having anybody sign a contract to marry Pride, yeah. aka the devil. And he said, I promise I won't force a bride into a contract.
But I feel like, however, that what he was already doing? Like, I feel like he wasn't forcing them. Was he? Like, I feel like it's always been a choice. So, like, he was just like, yes. I'm going to do what I always do. Fuck you.
Yeah, but I guess she doesn't see it that way. Yeah. She didn't see it as, he wasn't forcing them. In her mind, he was, like, trying to coerce them, even though he wasn't. Mm-hmm. Like, her, that's what her sort of thought process was. Well, who would ever, like, agree to marry the devil? So he must be coercing them in some way.
Yeah.
But, so I guess he promised he wasn't going to force them or coerce them, but he can still meet them and offer them the deal.
Yeah.
Right? But, like, so, yeah, so he, like, tells her that. He's like, hey, man, I just said I wouldn't force anybody. I'm still going to meet them. Because, you know, like, he needs to break the curse that we still don't really know anything about. So he lets her know that because she summoned him, it sort of binded her to him. So he can't go between the realms. He can't go from where he is back to hell. And essentially, he is tied to her until she severs their connection with the demon blade. So she's going to have to use his blade, essentially, to sever their connection. So she's like an anchor for him.
Yeah.
So next day, she goes, I just wonder when she's sleeping through all of this. She's not. Because she keeps working with him. She works with him at night. She's working with her parents and her grandmother during the day. Like, when is she sleeping?
I think she's just 18 and she doesn't need to sleep. Like, I don't know. When I was 18, I was like, just going all the time. True. We were on her. Always. 18 to, like, 23, 24.
Yeah.
We didn't sleep.
That's true. Yeah. Anyway, so she goes to work next day and her mother asks her where she was last night. And essentially tells her that Antonio came by the house telling her mom that she'd been at the monastery with a young man. And it sort of insinuates that she thinks Amelia is, like, burying her grief through sex. And, like, Amelia's really embarrassed that her mother is having this conversation with her.
Which is fair.
And then she starts picturing her and Wrath together. And, like, she kind of liked it.
Yeah. As you would.
Like, she wasn't disgusted by it, even though she felt like she should be. Because he's a demon. And her mom... I actually low-key love the mom in this moment because all her mom says is just to be more careful.
Yeah.
Like, she doesn't say, you shouldn't be having sex or anything like that. And she doesn't say, like, it's a terrible way to go to, like, work through your grief. She doesn't, like, say any of that. She just tells her to be careful. Yeah,
but I'm also like, maybe you should say don't have sex in the monastery. Like...
That too.
That seems tray sacrilegious.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Anyway, so Amelia obviously is like, yeah, don't worry, Mom. I'm not, like, I'm fine. It's fine. But she is, like, really pissed that Antonio came to her house and told her mom.
I would lose my fucking shit.
Yeah.
He has no right.
And she's like... No. And she's like, I can't believe I ever wanted to kiss him. And then she calls him a nosy fool in her head.
Yeah.
So, like, any feelings I think that she had for him are now, like, just gone. Because, like, it's true. He's, like, tattling on her.
He,
it's 100%. Not an attractive quality. Anyway, her mom tells her that she needs to make extra pasta tonight because the mom promised Antonio that Amelia would bring some by to apologize for last night. Just the fact that she was in the monastery so late and, like, disturbed them. But this is hilarious. So she's like, okay. So she makes the extra pasta and brings it by. And all the brothers are, like, in the dining room, and she, like, slams the food on the tables and makes all of them look. And she's, like, making angry eyes, and she's like, buen appetito, or, like, something. Like, she just says, like, something, but they can all tell, like, she is very mad. You know what I mean? So, like, she's not, like, apologizing for shit.
Oh my god, no. And she shouldn't.
Anyway, so he was like, so she, like, makes angry eyes, like, shoots daggers at Antonio, and he's like, let's speak out in the hall. And then she just tells him, she's like, I can't believe you told my mother, and essentially says, like, who I spend time with is none of your business.
Yep.
And, like, yes, girl, go for it. Get it. And then he just tells her, like, he's sorry, but he was concerned seeing as how her sister died in that room a month ago, and now she was in the room with a stranger, so he felt concerned. I know. But to be fair, it brings her down, and I'm mad about it. I wish she would stay pissed. Yeah. But then, I guess, it's sort of, she gets deflated because he tells her that another girl has been killed. And she's, like, probing him, like, where? And he's like, I don't know. Because, like, she's sort of hoping her and Wrath can, like, head to that location and do some tests. Like, he can test some things.
See if she had an allegiance, too. And I'm like, what, is he just gonna go lick her blood? Like,
yep.
Cool.
Yes, he is. Anyway, so that sort of deflates her, and she's like, yeah, okay, see you later, pal. But, like, she's not as mad anymore, and I don't like it.
Yeah.
Be mad! Yeah. Be grudgy.
Stay wrathful.
Be vengeful. Anyway, so she meets up with Wrath, and they go to the market to find out where the body was found, because there's a gossipy busybody there in the market.
Yeah, he's the one that last week gave her the shirt and told her where to find the casino. Was that last week?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So they're going back there. So they do know the girl's name. It's Julia Santorini. Her grandmother is actually the one who went crazy that we discussed last week for scrying in a Black Mirror. Mm-hmm. So they go talk to Salvatore. Wrath, he goes there and he's like, I don't want this shirt. Give me that shirt. And, like, it was, like, a really cheap shirt versus a really pricey black shirt. Mm-hmm. But he, like, shoots, like, daggers at Salvatore. And he's like, yes, sir, excellent choice. And, like, just lets him trade.
I love it. I love how invested Wrath is in clothing. Like, yeah. I love it so much.
Yeah. Yeah. And that is something that continues throughout the series. Okay, so Salvatore tells them that the body was found near the palace. Like, does anybody live in the palace? I don't know.
What even is the palace?
I don't think so. I don't know. It's just, it's like, I feel like it's a castle.
Yeah.
But I don't know if anyone lives there. They never talk about, like, a ruling monarch or anything. So, I don't know. But the body was found near the palace, right in front of the ricotta stall. Poor ricotta.
I love how much they talk about food here. Is this the stall?
Me too.
This feels like it's the same stall that he was like, you can talk to this person if you can't find it. And she was like, he has a ricotta stall, when they were talking about the gambling thing. I don't know if I'm just making connections where.
I don't know, because the Domenico guy, he has his stall is not ricotta. He sells arancini.
Oh, yeah. No, I don't really remember. He was just like, if you can't find it, ask this guy. And she was like, she went to his stall and she was like, he must be gambling.
Yeah, no, I think that's Domenico.
Okay.
Domenico Sr.
Yeah.
Right? Because she saw him at the hall. Yeah. He sells arancini. Okay, so they go to the murder scene, but it's like way too crowded. So they're like, we'll come back tomorrow, essentially, once the crowd is dispersed. But Rath can tell just by scent that none of his brothers are involved. So they agree that they need to keep the next bride safe, because this girl was who they were supposed to meet up with to give the deal. Like, she was the next potential bride.
Yeah.
And she's already dead. So they're like, well, that means we should keep the next girl on the list. We need to keep her safe. So Rath says, I'll send word to my realm and figure it out. And he says, sweetest dreams.
Aww.
And leaves. I know. Do you know what I don't understand? So if they're killing potential brides, right? Mm-hmm. And, like, they killed a witch first in a different city. Then they came to Palermo and killed a witch. Then they killed Vittoria. Then now they're killing someone else. Mm-hmm. Why was Amelia skipped in the list? Because, like, you would think that Vittoria and Amelia would be offered, like, if Vittoria was killed, you'd think they'd offer it to Amelia next.
Yeah.
Why was she skipped?
I don't know. You would think that, but maybe they're, like, spreading it out. I don't know. Maybe Vittoria made a deal of don't ask my sister.
Oh, yeah, that's a good idea.
I don't know.
Anyway, it was just a thought. So the next day, she's at the restaurant, and her mother decides to make cassata for dessert. And apparently it's Amelia and Vittoria's favorite cake. And obviously it makes both Amelia and the mom really sad.
Mm-hmm.
But she still tells her mom, like, that's a great idea, mom. Like, make the cassata. Her dad comes in with a letter that Salvatore dropped off. And it's from her friend, mm-hmm. quote unquote, a.k.a. Rath. And it gives her, like, a meeting place and a time. Okay. So the meeting place is a castle. And on the front door, there's a note telling her to head to the roof. So she heads up there, and he's, like, just relaxing mm-hmm. in the sun. And she's confused, because she thought demons couldn't go out in the sun, which is why they've been conducting all of their business at night. And, like, the sun is setting, so it's not, like, it's, like, full day. It's sunset-y. But he tells her, like, no, that's a lie. I can go out. Whenever and wherever. And she's like, why did you summon me? Because she was like, do you have the name of the next bride? And he's like, nope. And she's like, have you found out something I need to know? He's like, nope. And she's like, okay, well then why am I here? Like, why did you call me here? And he just tells her, this is where we'll be staying. It's warded against everything.
I just don't get it. Like, I don't. I'm like, how do you expect her to go to her parents who just lost a daughter and say, peace out, I'm going to live with this man who, if her grandmother sees, she'll know that he's a prince of hell. So obviously she can't show him off. Like, who's letting their 18-year-old go live in a castle with a grown-ass man?
You're correct. Like, I agree with you. However, he's a demon. I don't think he thinks about those things.
Yeah, no, it doesn't seem like he does. He's just like, make it work. And she's like, I think it's later this week. She just does. And her parents are never mentioned again. I don't know if that's true. I haven't read the end of the book. But, like,
no, you're not wrong.
She doesn't talk to them for, like, 3 weeks or something after moving out of their house, and like, yeah, they don't try to find her. They don't like put out an APB, like she's not showing up on milk bottles. Like, I don't know. I don't know, man.
Yeah, I mean, obviously I have answers, but I can't give them to you.
That's fair. Does someone like make them forget that they had 2 daughters and they think they only have one who then died?
Do you want...
No, I don't.
Do you want me to answer that question?
It's just my... That's the theory I'm going to go with, because otherwise...
Okay.
I'm at a loss of how bad parents they are.
Yeah. No, that's fine. I mean, her mother was fine with her, like, sexing her way out of grief, so...
Yeah, and we're, like, that's why I'm like, what time period is this? But, yeah, fun times.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Anyway, I just really like that he's like, this is where we'll be staying.
Yeah.
And I, like, because when I reread that, I was like, we? Like, he expects her to move in with him?
Yeah.
I sort of love it. Anyway, so she asks, so, like, he gets up to go, and she's like, well, where are you going? And he's like, he has an associate that met with Pride's messenger to get the next girl's name, and the associate saw the messenger chat to somebody else in a hood, and Rath thinks that, like, that could be the murderer. Mm-hmm. So he's going to meet the messenger and interrogate him. I'd like to know how the messenger is getting in and out of hell. Like, if a prince of hell can't get in and out free willy-nilly, how can a messenger?
But last week he was also like, or week one, he was like, nobody knows who the brides are but me and my brother. Like, all cocky and stuff. And you're like, obviously there are messengers. What are you talking about?
Mm-hmm. Yes, he doesn't think this messenger is worth even being considered a person.
Yeah.
Anyway, so he's going to interrogate the messenger, and Amelia's like, I'm going too, but he's like, you'll be busy grabbing your things. So, like, he's like, he literally wants her to go home right now, grab her shit so that she can move in immediately, like today.
Yep.
And then he tells her to change into something more appropriate.
Interesting.
I'm thinking something more princessy.
Something.
Considering they're deaf Mary.
I love it. It all goes back to, like, I love how much he loves clothes. And, like, it just makes me so happy.
Yeah. So, like, he picked out this, like, black dress for her. So she goes all the way home, changes, and meets up with him again. Even though he was like, I don't want you to come with me. You have to pack. Mm-hmm. And she's like, no way, bitch. I'm coming. So they talk a little bit, like, on their way to the meeting place. They talk a little bit about demons and why they steal hearts and souls and whether Vittoria suffered. And, like, Rath just gets annoyed with her for being emotional. And he just says, like, she probably did suffer because her heart was ripped from her beating chest.
Yeah. Thanks, Rath. So comforting. 10 out of 10.
Yeah.
Would listen to again.
Yeah. Right? But, like, he's like, you just want me to placate you. And, like, he's like, if that's what you want, and, like, if you want to be emotional, then, like, go home and wait for the monsters to come and get you.
Mm-hmm.
And she sort of freaks out and, like, gets really angry and tells him that, like, she is literally focused on nothing else since her sister was killed. And, like, she'll destroy anything that gets in the way of finding her sister's killer. And, like, don't you dare call her emotional.
Mm-hmm.
And he just, like, doesn't react to that the way I think she wanted him to. Because he just said, like, this is your mistake. You're being emotional right now. He was like, I barely said anything. And you just, like, exploded and told me your deepest desire. And now I can ask you anything. I can ask for anything from you in exchange for your deepest desire, and you'll give it to me.
Yeah.
So, like, essentially he's trying to teach her a lesson on dealing with demons.
Which is, like, his whole, their whole time together. It's, like, what he's doing. And I'm, like, mm-hmm. I'd get so annoyed. I would be so annoyed
I would, him. Too. Yeah. Yeah. So she's pissed because she sort of knows, like, oh, he's sort of correct. Yeah. And she starts, like, poking at his chest and telling him that, like, that's not her only desire or, like, motivation or whatever. Essentially saying, trying to, like, backtrack and be like, that's not all I want in life. But he, like, grabs her hand to his chest and, like, they have, like, sort of a steamy moment. But before anything can happen, she, like, pulls back and asks him about the curse. And he's about to say something about it when a guy shows up. So his name is Francesco. And Rath, like, just pounces on him immediately and, like, holds him against the wall and he's choking him. And he tells Amelia that the scent of blood drives him crazy. And, like, I think he said it's not just him, but, like, the princes of hell, mm-hmm. too. Like, it's not the blood itself that they love, but the power of it. Like, the more he lets someone bleed, the more their life is in his hands. And it's that power over life and death that makes them, that they enjoy. Princes of hell are apparently all about power. They just keep wanting it. And she'd sort of forgotten that there was a brutal side to him.
Yeah.
Because he's a demon. Rightfully so. He's been nothing but a little pussycat.
He's been so nice.
He has been so nice. He's like, here, move into my big castle so I can protect you. Here, have a new dress. Anyway, so he tells her that he craves power more than money or blood or lust. And he would do anything for power, including sell his soul again. Which is odd, because she didn't think demons had souls.
Yeah. Also, again.
But, like, yeah. But then she realized that by admitting this to her, which I don't understand this whole thing, how she's figuring this out, he was offering her a choice to walk away from what he was about to do or stay and be a part of it.
Yeah.
I don't understand how she figured that out from that context, but she does.
That's good, because I wouldn't have.
She's nope, me neither. She's really great at reading between the lines, I guess. Anyway, she thought of, like, her sister's body and all the other young girls that have died, and she nods at him and she's like, nope, I'm sticking around. So he asks the guy, Francesco, who paid him to open his letter, because obviously the messenger opened. So I guess this is sort of the thing. So technically, Pride and Wrath are the only two that should know the names of the bride. Mm-hmm. This guy, Francesco, the messenger, I guess he gets a sealed up letter and is just supposed to hand it from Pride to Wrath,
yeah,
without looking at it. But somebody has paid him to read the letter so that he can then tell that person what's on it.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so he refuses to answer and calls Wrath a demon pig. Mm-hmm. Amelia tries sweet-talking him and, like, they threaten him with daggers and Wrath's power, but, like, he won't budge. And Amelia knows that, like, Wrath is getting mad, still holding him against the wall and choking him and letting him bleed. And she's like, Wrath might accidentally kill him. Mm-hmm. So she's like, enough of this. I'm going to use a truth spell on him. So she uses it, gets information. He doesn't know who he sold the info to because the person had a hood. But he gave him another address and a time to meet, but no name. So, like, now whoever he sold that info to has a time and a place to meet the next bride.
Yeah.
He pees his pants, I guess, like, because she is using her truth power on him and it makes him scared or whatever. And he starts bleeding from his nose. I guess the truth magic is like having this effect on him. Yeah. So she stops. And it, whatever it was sort of caused him to temporarily forget who he is. Like it caused like memory loss. Mm-hmm. So Rath has to remind him that he's Francesco and he got drunk and go home to his wife. But he's like, where? Like he doesn't even remember where he lives.
Which is why I'm like, she did this on her childhood friend. It had to have had some like residual effects and like fucked him up somehow.
Yeah, but I also, I feel like she was a little bit more forceful in this magic and like pulling things that he didn't want revealed. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like asking one question that maybe came a little bit out of the blue, he probably wasn't prepared. Like, he probably didn't want to hide it as much as, you know what
I
mean?
Yeah. Like, I get what you're saying.
She feels sick that, like, she did this. This was not a demon. This was her. Like, she's the one who did all this, and she sort of feels guilty. And Rath tells her, like, I would have gotten the info sooner or later. Like, don't be so hasty next time. Because she used forbidden magic, so a piece of her soul is gone now forever.
Which is, like, did she lose a piece of her soul as a little child, too? Like, how much soul does one person have?
I assume we have a lot of soul.
Yeah.
So, he tells her that they have to get to Quattro Canti, where the real messenger is waiting for them.
I don't understand.
Get at all.
Who was that person? Was he just a warm-up? Like...
I don't know. I just don't know. So they go to the square and Rath asks her to like stay in the alley for a minute so that he can talk to his associate privately. He goes over and she actually sneaks a little bit closer to hear a little bit. What she hears is ... suspects the truth. I'm sure the others will in time too. The human that he's talking to, because she can tell he's a human, his name is Anir, says that he chose to do the ritual and it can't be that bad, can it? And Rath says she's a demon-blooded witch. What does Anir think? Like, what do you, like, he's like, oh, it can't be that bad. And he's like, she's a demon-blooded witch. Yeah. What do you think? So, like, sort of insinuating that it is that bad. And Anir says that she sounds lovely. And he says, will he be introducing them since he only has ... and then Rath pulls him up by the collar and tells him not to finish that sentence. Yeah. And Anir reminds him it's only temporary. But Rath senses her behind him then so that he cuts off the conversation. So we're just getting a lot of questions and very few answers. So he introduces Anir to Amelia and sees, and she sees that he's human. And she asks why Anir can't be his anchor. So like earlier they discussed how like she is keeping him in the world. If she died, he would be thrust back into the demon realm and wouldn't be able to come back to Italy to find the killer, right? He needs her so that he could stick around. So she's sort of been asking him, like, can you ask this person to be an anchor? Can you get this person to be an anchor? It has to be a person.
Yeah, though. They have to be human from, I guess it's like to do with what realm you call home.
Yeah. But Rath says that Anir doesn't claim the human world as his home anymore, so he can't anchor Rath here. Anir then tells them that the next girl, the next potential bride, is Valentina Rossi. And Amelia's like, that's Claudia's cousin.
Interesting.
And Amelia sort of sees a pattern that they keep choosing witches with ties to dark magic. And it sort of like is like, well, why did he pick my sister then? So then we're sort of getting, well, maybe Victoria had more ties to dark magic than they thought. Yeah.
But it also, maybe that's why they don't choose her.
Oh, yeah, 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 maybe. So Anir is going to answer that question. Like, I guess she says it out loud. But Rath is like, sort of shuts him up and is like, you go away.
Yeah.
But Anir's like, no, no, you might need an extra set of eyes, so I'll stay and come with you. So they head to the meeting, and Rath is sort of saying, like, he would like to use Valentina as bait to find the killer if she accepts the bargain. But Amelia tells him that, like, she knows that family very well. And she's going to try and convince her not to take the bargain. So, like, essentially, they're both going to go up to Valentina. Rath's going to be like, be the bride. And she's going to be like, don't listen to him. Don't do it. Don't.
You'll die.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Can you imagine? I just feel like I'd be bombarded.
Yes.
Like, imagine having two people, like, start fighting at you to make a decision.
But I'm also like, she's not super wrong. Like, everyone else has died who's agreed to do this. So, like...
Yeah.
Until we figure out who's trying to kill, could we just maybe take a break of finding these brides? They're all dying.
But to be fair, I don't even know if the last one, they haven't even met with her. They hadn't met with her yet. She was just on the list to be offered the deal. She hadn't even been offered it yet. So, like.
Well, it depends who this.
And she was already dead. Yeah,
it depends who this, like, killer is and what they know. Because, like, if they have the list, maybe they're just killing them preemptively kind of thing. Yeah. It's interesting.
Yeah. So they walk towards the meeting place and Anir sort of tells her his story about how he got involved with Rath. He was an only child and was playing in a tree when his parents were killed. Apparently his father had witnessed a crime and was going to go to the authorities when someone came and killed him and his wife, just so that he couldn't go forward. So Anir has, like, a huge scar on his face, and she's like, did that happen when you were a kid? And he's like, no, that happened when I was an adult. He said he traveled through South America fighting in underground rings, and sometimes those fights were to the death, and obviously he survived. He was, like, a reigning champ when Rath came and offered him employment. So, but he has no idea how long he's been working for Rath. I think, like, yeah, I think just, like, time works differently in the underworld versus this world.
Yeah.
So, he doesn't actually know how long he's been not a member of the human world. So as they walk, Amelia feels like a tug in her gut, sort of like similar to when she found Victoria's body and had that like tug of magic. Same thing. So they round the corner and they find Valentina's body. And she sort of like, she sort of already knew that they would.
Yeah.
And like, she is not okay. She's sick to her stomach looking at this poor girl. And Rath realizes that there must be a spy in the kingdom, and one of the brothers must be behind it. Like, there's no other solution.
Which is funny, because that's exactly what Amelia's been saying the whole time. And, like, obviously, he knows his brothers better than she does, so, like, I'm not surprised, but it's just, oh, she was right about an assumption she made.
Yeah. But then, so she suggests, like, maybe it's greed or envy, but, like, that annoys me because I feel like she's throwing out those two names because those are the only two she's met. It's like, why those two? Like, it just annoys me. It's like the only reason you're suggesting them is because you've met them.
But I guess part of her process is that, like, they're in the human world. So it makes sense. But
I guess,
like, If you can send demons places, then one of the princes that isn't in the human world could easily do the same. Like, I don't know.
Yeah. Anyway, Rath is like, no, no, I don't think it's them. And Anir just says, like, forget about the curse. He needs to secure his own house before war comes. So regardless of personal feelings, he needs to finish the marriage bond to Amelia.
Is he the Suriel? Is he Rowan? Like, what the fuck is going on? Anir is the new Suriel. Like...
Bombshell. Yeah. Like, that's, like, just dropping truth bombs everywhere. Like, and Amelia's just like, what marriage bond?
Of course.
And Anir's like, the one you started when you bound the prince to you. And she's like, wait, what? So Rath dismisses Anir and he's like, oh, you loud mouth. And he essentially tells her that the Latin translation that she used to summon him, bound forever in protection, or whatever it is. The bound forever part actually refers to holy matrimony. So, like, remember when we were like, oh, she said she's not very good at Latin.
Yeah, that's going to come back and haunt her.
Yep, yeah, this is what happened. She essentially, like, said that she could have summoned him without that part, but because she included it, they are betrothed.
Neat.
Yeah. But my question is, how does marrying a witch solidify his house? Because remember, Anir was like, you need to finish the marriage bond to solidify your house. And it's like, how does that, I know you don't know, but, like, it's a question that I have. Yeah. Like, how does marrying this, like, human, like, I know she's technically not human because she's a witch, but, like, how does that help?
I don't know. Maybe it's just, like, having a wife is part of, like, I don't know. I got nothing.
Me neither. Anyway, she freaks out at this news. She sort of asks, like, are you going to force me to marry you and rule in hell? And he's like, no. And then she actually asks, well, what did Anir mean about securing your house? But he refuses to answer her. And she says some not nice things, calling him soulless and despicable, and says that, like, when she marries, she wants it to be for love, and... she releases him from whatever bond they have, thinking that it'll sever him being her anchor, or her being his anchor, and, like, send him back to the underworld or whatever. And then she runs away.
Which is, like, pretty intense. And, like, just, I'm mad, so I'm gonna send him back to his own world now.
Yeah. Anyway, so she runs away and she vows to find Vittoria's killer on her own and Rath can go back to wherever he came from. Essentially, Rath can go to hell. Hilarious.
I know. I find it funny. So Amelia basically ends up at a restaurant and she left an anonymous tip for the police about the body, and she thinks to herself, like, she can't go see Claudia until her family is told about the murder. So, like, she can't show up before the police tell them. She's also humiliated about the betrothal, especially, like, she thinks, one, Rath hates witches, and she thinks about, like, how... she thought that she was, like, so, just, I kind of said it the first week, she was so cocky, she thought she was doing so well with this protection thing, and she fucking married a demon. She wasn't very smart.
Yeah.
But she starts thinking then, too, about, like, how to solve the murders, and then Rath just shows up and sits across from her, and I love it. But she asks how he found her, and he says the tattoo, which is part of the marriage bond. And he didn't want to tell her until she trusted him. And he says, like, he hasn't lied to her. And she's like, well, you know, trust is hard when you would have dropped that bomb on her. Like, I can't imagine they'd get to a level of trust in each other, and he'd be like, hey, I've been not telling you this. Like,
yeah. I also just love how, like, he doesn't give her any space. She literally walks away, goes to sit at a restaurant, and then he's like, hello.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like he doesn't even give her time to be mad about it.
Like, she clearly needs a few minutes.
It's like, I'll give her 20 minutes maximum.
Yeah. Like, I don't know. Maybe he's afraid she'll run into someone. Who knows?
Yeah.
So, yeah. She ends up ordering them food. And it all sounds delicious. And Rath...
I know!
Like, all of it. And Rath orders them red wine with orange slices. And I'm like, I want to eat here. Yeah. I love the attention to food in this book. I know it's like a secondary plot point, but it's just, I just love it. It's different and I enjoy it. All sounds yummy. When the food gets there, Rath actually piles a plate up for her first and then serves himself. And I just like, this is a prince of hell, but his manners are impeccable.
Yes, yeah. Well, I mean, he's a prince. You would expect princes to have good manners. Yeah,
that's true. He's kind of skeptical about the food, like he is about all food, but she offers him a scampi on her fork, and he tries it, and then he, like, starts eating one of all of his food, and he's like, oh, cool, this is delicious. She eats a scampi herself, and she thinks of how, like, they use more acid here than she does at her restaurant, and how she could incorporate that into her recipes. And then she immediately feels guilty for daydreaming about creating recipes when her twin has been gone a month. And it's like, I don't know, I found it's a very common thing in guilt to, like, when you are feeling happy and then immediately you feel like, oh, I shouldn't feel happy now because this person has died. So, like,
yeah,
I like how real the guilt feels to me and, like, the grief.
Yeah, it is, like, survivor's guilt, mm-hmm. though. Like, that is legit a thing, right?
So, yeah. She also thinks, like, how much her life has changed in that month because she's literally sitting across from a Malvagi, and you're like, yes, it has really taken a turn here.
But, like, to be fair, though, it's all in her quest for revenge, mm-hmm. right? Like, if she was not so vengeful... Mm-hmm. If she just grieved sort of like a, I'm saying quote unquote like a, I don't want to say that. Like, if she just grieved sort of the way, like in the natural order of grief,
yeah.
right? And wasn't like so hell-bent on revenge, yeah. then yeah, her life would have just picked up where she had left off, like cooking in the restaurant, and
she eventually would have fell back into herself and, like,
yeah.
Started making recipes again. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So Rath kind of notices that she's not eating and something has changed and asks if she's experiencing a moral dilemma. And she doesn't really have the heart to be angry at him when he says that. She thinks of, like, how lost she is and how she has more questions now than answers, like, being basically married. That's a big development. She then tells him she wants to know everything about the curse. And he asks if she's considered moving in with him. And she says she has considered it, but she doesn't give an answer. And he asks where her things are. But she says, at home. So, like, it's kind of like when he assumed that she was going to agree to the blood bond, but then she was like, you just assumed that. I didn't say it. And you're like, eh.
She's very non-committal. Yes.
And so he says they should talk about this, like, at the house. He doesn't want to do it in public. But she refuses to leave without hearing some answers. So she asks how the curse to pride affects him, because, like, it kind of just seems like he's roped into talking to these witches. Like, why is he part of this at all? But yeah. He says he'll answer questions if she agrees to stay with him. And she just says him answering questions will help her decide. So non-committal AF. Mm-hmm. He tells her in order for the curse to be broken, a consort needs to sit on the throne and help rule House Pride. And she asks how the last consort was murdered, because I guess, I forget when she was told that, but at some point. But he tells her that the last consort's heart was torn from her chest, as were the hearts of some of her royal ladies.
Yikes. Yeah. So definitely there's something
similar, something.
Yes, this yes, is, yes.
It's matching. Whatever that means.
Yeah.
So she asks him if the first witch cursed Pride, and he says yes. And she now has to, like, reconcile in her head that, like, all of the La Prima Strega stories that she heard weren't just stories. It's real. And she, like, remembers some of them. Like, apparently La Prima Strega didn't use light or dark magic, just raw power. And it was from the goddess who birthed her. And she predated humans and the old religion. So that's interesting. And I don't really understand it. But I guess a goddess made her. And she was one of the first things on Earth. I don't know. Maybe demons were on Earth or in hell before humans were on Earth. I don't really understand the timeline of, like, her being alive before humans, but who knows? I don't know. So, she then asks, like, why the first witch cursed Pride. And he says it's a punishment for what happened with her firstborn. And she thinks back to Clodia's story and asks, if Pride took the first witch's firstborn and stole her soul. But he says what actually happened was her daughter willingly agreed to marry Pride and they fell in love. And she thinks of her Nona telling her about Stele Strega, which is like, she asked her what, I forget what they called her. Someone called her.
So they called her a shadow witch.
Yes. And her grandmother said that they were actually Stella Strega, which is Star Witch. So she asked him about that. And she, I guess, the daughter of the first witch was supposed to be a guardian between realms. And she was supposed to be kind of like a soldier. And La Prima demanded she give up her throne and return to the coven, but she refused to. So it was just like a classic, like, she fell in love with someone she wasn't supposed to, and then her mother was pissed, yeah. So she cursed him because she couldn't control what her daughter's feelings were. Like, maybe she wasn't the greatest. But basically, the first witch used the darkest magic to remove her daughter's power and banish her from the coven. And that is why some of the daughters of witches don't have magic. So, like, I like that they did bring this in and, like, have an explanation for it. Like, why her mother doesn't have magic. So I guess that kind of convinces Amelia that this is probably true, and she asks then, like, why he's helping, because he didn't answer the first question she asks. And he says several years ago something fractured in the gates of hell, and it's part of a prophecy, and Pride just laughed it off, but then his wife was murdered and his powers were dampened and he was trapped in hell. And lesser demons started testing them by trying to slip through cracks in the gates. So I guess there's some prophecy that we don't know about yet, but it has to do, obviously, with this curse. I assume at some point we're getting the prophecy.
Confusing.
Yeah.
It's so confusing and convoluted and like, I'm just confused. Yes.
And then it like.
Like, what does, like, so like, so, so, okay, so wait. So, the Prima Witch, her daughter fell in love with who?
Right.
And married him. And then the Prima got mad and cursed everybody.
Cursed him. Cursed Prime. So, well, and cursed her daughter. But I think cursed her daughter immediately, and it seems like cursed Pride, but it didn't actually, like, the curse wasn't in place until her daughter died.
Wait, what? So you, so the consort that died is the Prima's daughter?
I assume so. Did he get another wife?
I don't know. That's why I'm confused. Like, is this the same person? Because she said she removed her power and banished her from the coven. So does that mean she's just stayed with Pride as a regular
person? That's what I kind of assumed, but...
Because now then it's saying that's why some daughters don't have magic. I thought that was because she was a witch without power and, like... And, but she, like, created children and it just... fed into the bloodline of not having.
Yeah, you would think that she would have to, but then I guess the other part is obviously there are witches that have demon blood, so maybe she had children with Pride, and that's the children that they're talking about, and that's why Amelia now has demon blood in her, because she's a descendant of this daughter of La Prima.
Maybe. I'm so confused.
But he's also just not telling her everything. He's like, here's an overview. Prophecy. Not going to tell you what that is, though. So, like, I feel like there's a bunch of holes. But I guess the most important part now is demons are slipping through the cracks in the gates. And apparently creatures that don't want to face the trial in the portals of a thousand fears have gotten through the gates. So I'm guessing, like, to get to the human realm from hell, you need to go through this portal of a thousand fears. And if, like, that's the only way to get to the human world, is my assumption, because they don't explain what it is. But with the gates broken, they can kind of bypass that and get here anyway. It's just, like, I assume, I have no idea what is happening. So lesser demons are now in this world is basically the point. She asks what they should be concerned about. And he says the Apper demon, who like has a head of a boar, tusks of an elephant and a reptilian body. And they love witch's blood and to drain it. And she's like, what? And then he smiles at her and something sniffs behind her ear and he tells her not to run. But who's going to listen to that when what he just described is behind them? But this is also like one of those cliffhanger chaptery things. So it actually goes to the next chapter and it's a grimoire warning about demons that crave a witch's blood will be relentless. And you're like, yeah, I can understand where this is going to go. So she already starts running basically before Wrath even gets his warning out and she throws a barrel behind her and she ends up tripping on the cobblestone and she looks back, but there's nothing there. And it's like unnaturally silent and blood and bones said by the Umber demon comes into like, she hears it and she's like, turns around and like, I don't really know. I'm assuming the Umber demon is there. I don't think that she's just like, or was she just remembering?
She says blood and bones as a, like, a curse word. Like, instead of saying shit, she has blood and bones. Like, it's like, it's her, like, from, that's something that she does, like, throughout the series.
Yeah. So, obviously demons affect, like, when a demon is around, everything goes silent and, like, that's probably a good warning that she should know in the future. So she turns around and the Apper demon is there, and she kind of like goes back and forth, but it follows her and she refuses to break eye contact and run until they're like down a dead end, and they end up by a door with a paw print holding a stock. And she reaches for her moonblush chalk, but she doesn't, like, I'm pretty sure she doesn't have her.
She doesn't have it because she's wearing, isn't she wearing
yeah. Oh,
Rath's,
yes.
She's wearing the dress Rath gave her.
And it doesn't have pockets.
That it doesn't have a secret yeah. pockets.
And while she's reaching for something that she doesn't even have, its teeth snap at her neck and she feels pain, but she like refuses to die like this. But then a dagger goes through its heart and absorbs the life force. So it's Rath's dagger. And I guess he has it, even though I don't remember when he got it, but
she must have given it back to him yeah. at some point.
So it goes through the demon's chest, and like obviously this dagger's weird. It's absorbing things. So it's absorbing the life force of the demon, but it's like an inch away from Amelia's heart. And I'm like, that would be pretty terrifying. But Rath tells her to always have a defensive spell ready or a weapon. Because like demons, especially this one, sole purpose is to kill, and they're good at it. And she can tell that he was like actually concerned about her, but she's also mad at him, of course.
Of course.
Rath tells her, for what it's worth, he wouldn't have let the demon kill her. Maybe a slight nip. And yeah. I just love it. But he asks her then if she recognizes the symbol that like she just saw on the door. And she asks if it's one of Envy's symbols, but he says no. He tells her it's a fennel stalk. And she kind of thinks she recognizes it, but she can't quite place from where. And like, I don't really remember hearing anything about it, but that doesn't mean we didn't. And then Rath asks her if she wants to have a look inside, and she says yes, but she feels dread at the thought of going in, and he calls her a liar, but they still go in to this. It's just a big room, and it just has like crates and fishing traps and stuff. And it's like, why is this room have a feeling to it? Like, obviously there's something more yeah. to it. But he says it looks like it hasn't been used in a while. And she asks if the Apper demon led them there somehow. Like, it seems wild that this would be a coincidence. And she thinks to herself that she wants to check Vittoria's diary to see if there's a connection there to the symbol, because it looks so familiar. But she does feel like there's something in here, and there's like a humming, but she's like, meh, can't figure it out.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they agree to meet at home. I'm guessing that he says it, and he's like, let's meet at home. You go grab all your things. And she's like, sure. And I'm like, she still hasn't agreed. Why are you assuming that she's just going to change her mind?
I also like, I don't understand why he is so insistent that she needs to be in the castle where it's all warded and protected. Like so far she has had no threats on her life. Yeah. So like, why? And like, apart from him showing that little protective side, like, I don't understand why he's so insistent that she needs to be there. She's been fine.
Yeah.
Apart from this whole scenario with the demon.
Yeah.
Like with the Apper demon or whatever. But like, I don't get it.
Yeah. And I'm like, was this just like another teaching moment that he decided to like throw on her? Cause like, why is like, she's hearing about demons going through the gate for the first time, and then there's a demon there. I'm like, did he set this up?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. Anyway, she ends up going home, and she goes to her room because she wants to check her sister's diary, and the room is completely trashed. The rest of the house is fine, but she knows, like, it was probably a demon. She thinks the princes apparently have to be invited in, but other demons don't. And, like, any protection and magic spells that they would have in the room don't really work on demons like they thought they did. So she assumes that it was possibly an Umber demon, because that's what tried to kill her Nona. Yeah. And therefore, it must be greed, because she is under the assumption that greed sent the Umber demon to her house after seeing the Cornicello to steal it. So the diary is obviously gone. The love notes are ripped up. The summoning spell is ripped up too. And the perfume that was there is smashed in, like, because obviously they found Victoria's hiding spot. So she collapses on the collapsed bed. Like, they really fucked her room up. Like, her bed is even ruined. And she starts to sob because, like, this is the last piece of Victoria that she feels like she had. So she feels so helpless in this moment. And she does start to, like, worry about the city and the other demons that are apparently coming here if the gates are weakening. This is where I was like, what the fuck? But she gets up and she leaves her family a note saying she loves them, she'll be fine, but she can't stay here. And she refuses to lose anyone else, even if it means using the darkest magic. She doesn't put that in the note, but that's just, like, what she's thinking as she's leaving. She's like, even if I have to use the darkest magic there is, I won't lose anyone else.
Yeah.
But she just leaves her family a note and just walks out. She's like, cool, that'll work.
Yeah. But, like, also, so, like, Nona is, like, on, assumingly, still on bed rest after having her throat cut. Yeah. Like, Victoria is dead. The mom and dad are grieving. Who the fuck is taking care of the restaurant now that she's abandoning it too?
And why is nobody cares. It's wild. It's all wild. I can't.
And, like, you would think, like, it seems like it's a decently small town. Like, she knows all the people. So, like, you would think that, like, people would see her, like, gallivanting around town and her and tell her parents, like, oh yeah, I saw her with some dude, like, some sort of like Antonio did. But, like, you would think that her family would be like, oh my god, have you seen my child? And they'd all be like, yeah, she's staying at the castle, like, you know what I mean? I, like, it's just, it's
anyway, it's confusing me. Yeah, so after she leaves her house, she goes to see Claudia, and there's a bone altar for mourning and candles lit all over the house, because obviously her family has found out, or her and her aunt have found out about her cousin dying. Amelia obviously asks how she is, and Claudia is in, like, a grief stage of wanting vengeance too. So, like, she's, like, pissed. Which is fair. Like, they're witches and they're dying. Like, I'd be pissed and I'd want to find them to also save myself. Like, this is not cool. You're the exact demographic that is being killed. So Amelia then asks Claudia if she has a ward spell that is powerful enough to kill a demon if they cross it. And she asks Claudia to cast one around her house and one around Amelia's parents' house. And she offers her own blood for the spell. So Claudia takes it, and we assume she's going to go do that. Amelia goes off to Wrath's house then, and she picks a giant room there and, like, unpacks a bit and then goes into the bathroom. And when she comes out, Wrath is just, like, lying on her bed and asks if she's all right. And he looks at the bandage and asks what happened, because, like, obviously she cut herself to give Claudia some blood. But she has questions, which is, like, always. She always has questions. She says greed and envy want the Horn of Hades, so he must want it too. And she asks why he hasn't taken it, like, taken the half that she has from her. And she also tells him that someone stole her sister's diary, and he asks if she thinks it was him. And you're like, when would he have had time? Like, in the 20 minutes that he let you sit in your discomfort about being married, like, when would he have been able to trash? Well, I guess it was a lesser demon that did it, because, but still.
Yeah.
He could have orchestrated it. She also tells him that there was a spell on the diary, but she broke it, but it didn't have all the answers she wanted. And she just flops on the bed next to him, which I just love. Big fan. Yeah. And she thinks if she had her cornicello, she could close the gates of hell. And I'm like, I guess we can make that assumption. I don't know. Has somebody told us that? Like,
I thought they did. Didn't they say that at the beginning that the...
But wouldn't you need to be... I think it's all to counteract this curse. But Pride still needs a witch wife.
But to... Isn't that... Yeah.
But we don't actually know. We don't know what the curse is, and we don't know what's going to, like, fix the curse. We're just told that Pride is cursed, and he's trying to get a witch wife. to break the curse, but we don't actually really know what the curse is or what exactly he needs to break it, other than this is what they're trying, I guess. I don't know.
But, like, didn't we learn, like, about the cornicellos? Isn't that the thing that the Nonna, like, warns them of? Like, don't join them or it'll allow, like, the princes to breach the gates of hell and, like, come up on land or something? Yes,
but how would that...
So, like, maybe she assumes that she could control how the gates, whether they're open or closed?
Yeah, maybe. And, like, we do know that somebody said that the witch wife would rule with the Horn of Hades. Claudia said that. And, like, so, but, I don't know. I find there's some jumps that I don't get. But yeah, so he basically tells her then that there is a new witch chosen, and it's Isabella Chrissy? Not sure. And they'll meet her at dusk. And she grabs the pillow straight from beneath his head and closes her eyes, and he asks what she's doing, and she says preparing for war and to leave her alone, and then she falls asleep. I love that she pulled the pillow out from under his head. Big fan. She wakes up and he has covered her in a blanket, which I'm like, aww. But he also left her to go meet the witch alone because it is now dark and they were supposed to leave at dusk. And she's like, shit. So she is obviously furious because that is her main emotion. And she assumes it's so she can't go and tell Isabella not to make this deal. So she decides she can't really waste time because there's so much other stuff she needs to do. Oh, this is when she sleeps. Those few hours, that is all the sleep she gets in this whole book.
Yes.
Yeah, but she basically decides she needs to go out because she needs to find her cornicello. So she puts on a beautiful black and gold dress that has, like, snakes on it and stuff. And it's, like, very much House of Wrath dress code. Which I love. I love that he's dressing her in, like, beautiful things that are, like, related to his house. And she leaves, and she holds her sister's cornicello and thinks of her cornicello and follows a whisper of feeling. And she ends up on a sea cliff, and she, like, looks down, and there's a party below. And she tries to continue, but the amulet wants her to find something here. And she knows that if Vittoria was here, she would be at the party. And she gets kind of frustrated that she's the only one trying to stop the demons when there are, like, 12 other witch families. And, like, she decides that she's going to have a normal night and she's going to do what Vittoria would do and walks down the cliff to this party. And I kind of wonder, like, is the cornicello telling her that there's a cornicello down there? Is it, like, the first spell book is somewhere near here? Like, I feel like there's something that it wants her to get, and she's just like, fuck it. I can't, like, I'm just going to go party. And I'm like, no, follow the Gorgonzola, yeah. Figure out what it wants. But she's just like, right? Nope.
I feel like she hasn't. Yeah, I feel like she hasn't figured this out yet, to like that when the cornicello is telling you something, listen to it.
So I'm like, okay, we're just going to go have a party. That's not a terrible plan.
Nope.
But as she's walking down the cliff, the goddess calls out a warning, but she misses it because she's like, it's like as she's stepping onto the sand. And she feels an overwhelming sense of fear as soon as she takes that step. But then it's too late. She's, like, already reached the bonfire. So then we get another chapter start and a grimoire, I assume, thing. But it says, moon daughter rituals should be done at each full moon to release what no longer serves you. Which is interesting. But she's on the sand now, and after the fear dissipates or whatever, she just feels overwhelming pleasure. All of her anger disappears, her anger at Wrath, her anger about her sister, everything disappears, and all she feels is pleasure and bliss, and she starts dancing, and she feels invisible hands roam over her body, and they are saucy, and she is enjoying it. And it feels, she just thinks, like, it feels so good to be free and to forget about everything. So she just keeps dancing. And she thinks he is coming for her, her king, her damnation. And she, in her head, thinks she doesn't know how she knows that, but she does. And I'm like, okay, what does that mean?
Who is
like,
that?
Is it Wrath? Is it pride? Like, what is... Could she, like, delve into that a bit more for me? Because I need some explanation here. But she cannot. She thinks there's a choice hanging for her to right a wrong or damn them all. And a tiny voice screams in her head in warning, but she shoves all that aside and just keeps dancing. And someone gives her wine and she drinks it and she dances with her invisible partner again. And, like, it's getting sexy. It's like, her invisible partner's, like, touching her butt and everything, and you're like, woo.
But, like, all I can think of is she got dressed in this, like, elaborate dress with snakes on it, and now she's, like, on a beach. Like, all I can think of is her in a friggin', like, hoop skirt with all this tulle, and she's, like, dancing on a beach.
I assume it's... not that big.
I don't think it's...
It probably is, no, based but... on... But I assume it's more tight-fitted. Although, I don't know. I can't really picture it. A voice in her head whispers, remember, as above, so below. And she can feel something she should remember. And then something pierces her arm, and her eyes fly open. And she feels the fear again, but it's only for a second, and then she's, like, full-on pleasure and forgets about it. And then she sees him, and he is angry. Mm. And we're like, whoa. Mm. And her invisible dance partner vanishes, and she's preoccupied with him, and she wants him. And he reaches her and says, time to go, witch. But she says, hello, demon, let's dance. And he tells her that they're leaving immediately because she's tearing off her clothes and she's looking at his next. And she kind of looks down and she like didn't realize she was trying to take her clothes off. And I feel like that would be the most embarrassing moment of my entire life of like, but this is like such a trope. Like it's in everything. Like I still love it though.
Oh, I do too.
And he, like, puts his hands over hers to basically stop her from pulling her bodice off. And I'm like, no, let her do it.
it's like, just let it take you.
And she says, don't you want to see me naked? And I'm like, whoa, she's bold. But he just says, like, he already has. And if she wants to rip her clothes off when they get home, they can discuss it then. And I'm like, ooh. I like it. Woo. She goes for his clothes and he pulls away and like, she's literally going for his button on his pants. I'm like, damn.
Yeah.
But she tells him, like, for the embodiment of sin, he isn't very sinful. And she, like, touches his chest, and she feels his power respond to her, which I'm, like, I'm guessing is part of the marriage thing, but it's also just kind of interesting. Mm-hmm. She asks him why he won't touch her, and if it's because she's a witch. And she thinks of him saying she'll one day beg him to kiss her. And she, like, kind of curses him in her head because she's like, damn it, he's right. I will one day be begging for it.
Yeah.
And he just tells her that she's under lust's influence. And she looks behind her, and the Prince of Lust is there. And he is beautiful and golden. And, like, what does she say? She thinks that, like, his pants are so low on his hips that she could die. And I'm like, damn. Like, that is intense, but I love it. But he starts talking to them, and he calls her absolutely delicious. And she feels ice on her arms and realizes what's happening. And she's like, shit. He's worse than envy. He made her completely forget who she is and, like, her reason for living now, which is vengeance and her sister. And, like, envy almost made her cut out her heart. I don't know. I don't know if you can quantify which one of those is worse, but maybe envy, if she had gone ahead and killed herself. But then she's back into it. And yeah, she wants this prince of the House of Lust, then. She's like, he's hot, I want him. So she goes to step towards him, but Wrath pulls her back and holds her against him, and she remembers then how much she wants him. And Lust is, like, talking to them, but she can't focus on him because she's so in tuned with Wrath's body behind her. And there's too many sensations. And she hears Lust ask, do you know what that means, witch? And she doesn't, because she hasn't heard the rest of the conversation. But then he tells her to go dance, and that this is a practice before the Feast of the Wolf. I'm like, I don't know what that is, but okay.
I do.
She smells lavender and white sage then, and she knows that, like, that's what Victoria smells like, and she wants to find her. But that thought and that emotion, I guess, like, she can't forget that Victoria was dead. Like, it's such a major moment that actually, like, kind of takes her out of this, and she, like, snaps back to herself. And she says no, and Lust is startled and then furious, and he snaps his fingers and releases her from his magic. And Wrath is holding her up, and she immediately feels awful, and she starts throwing up because of the wine, I guess. And you're like, damn. But Wrath, like, keeps holding her through all of this. Lust tells Wrath then that he's wanted at home immediately, and he'll watch over her, which I would be like, please don't leave me. This is awful.
Yeah.
And Lust says he has much to tell her. And she just says no and starts digging her nails into Wrath's arms. And he shoves her behind him and drives his dagger into Lust's heart and says he'll go home when he's ready and he'll see him in hell, which I just love. Like, he'll see him in hell. Good. Chef's kiss.
Yikes.
But,
like, okay, so here's the thing. If Wrath needs a human anchor, who's Lust's human anchor? Who's Greed's human anchor? Who's Envy's human anchor? Like, I'm just... There's plot holes.
Well,
I don't like... It's not enough explanation for me.
But I just assume that they can, like... Obviously, Wrath was there before, but didn't have an anchor. Because he was there when he was licking Victoria's blood. So you're right. Like, I assume they can just go there without it, but can go home whenever. But, like, he can't leave right now because he's anchored to her. Like, I think this is different. Like, they can choose to go wherever they want, but he can't choose right now because he's anchored to her, is what I assumed. But there's a lot of assumptions being made, and I don't know anything, really.
Yeah.
But yeah. Lust vanishes, and Wrath tells her that, like, being struck with a house blade severs ties to the realm that you're in, and so he's obviously being sent back to hell, hence the see you in hell. And he also won't be able to use his power for a while, so, like, she doesn't have to be super worried that he'll be back soon. And he kind of explains to her that lust makes people feel pleasure, and when he's gone, she'll feel the opposite, and it can drive mortals mad if, like, they go from that high to high to low, like, multiple times. But she should be okay once she gets over this low. She asks if he would have made her but he cuts her off and says no. And she asks about the invisible hands, but he says they are manifestations of her own desire. And it was a part of her. And I guess, like, it wasn't a demon. It wasn't anything like that. It was just a part of her own lust that made the hands. So it like makes it better, I guess. But it's also still...
Yeah, like, it's not someone else touching her without her, like, consent. It's just herself. But, and I feel like that's probably why it was included, so that it wasn't a questionable consent issue. Yeah.
So she starts to feel the abyss then, and she thinks nothing matters anymore. And Wrath brushes a hand over her neck, where she thinks he kissed her before. Like, a small memory that she has from after the demon attacked her and he saved her. And he says, Valeas, which is Italian and means be strong, but I don't know Italian, so that's probably not how it's said. And he says, it will again soon, because she said nothing matters anymore. A week passes, and she just stays in bed. She barely sleeps, and when she does, she hears an urgent voice. And then, like, when she wakes up, she immediately forgets it. And, like, life is not good right now. Wrath is actually pretty patient with her. And sometimes when she's between, like, sleep and awake, he's there watching over her. And once she even imagined that he held her hand, which is so sweet.
It is so sweet.
He also forces her to eat because she doesn't care to. And she kind of wonders when he'll give up and let her just... wallow and, like, basically die if she doesn't eat, I guess. But he answers, and he says when she starts doing it on her own, and she doesn't think she said it out loud, and she doesn't care if he's in her head. And I'm like, oh, interesting. Like,
yeah, she is.
But it's also interesting, like, I don't know if we but I don't know if we knew that he could be in her head. And I don't know if this is definitely confirmation, but it kind of feels like it. He tells her a story then about a witch whose heart was ripped out emotionally, and vengeance and grief filled her, and she was close to discovering a long-forgotten secret when a terrible prince took the little pleasure she clung to and left her empty and vulnerable. And she just tunes him out then, because she knows that there's nothing left to cling to for her. 100%. That's exactly what just happened.
So that means there's a secret that she is close to figuring out that she needs to.
And, like, that's what the dreams are telling her, and that's what everything's telling her. But she's like, she doesn't care. Another week passes, and Raph's patience is done. So he literally just scoops her up, clothes and all, and puts her in a bath. And she's just, at first, like, pissed, but then she looks around, and there are candles in the window, and the window is open, and a breeze is coming in. There's a sand circle around the tub, and her favorite flowers are there. And she realizes that, like, there's a representation of each element: candles in the fire, window, air, sand, earth, water. in the
flowers. Yeah.
So like each element is there, and she knows it's an offering to the goddesses to bring a moon daughter back from darkness. So like he knows shit about witches. Like, why does he know this shit?
Yes.
But she relaxes into the peace it offers, and she says thank you as he's leaving. And she thinks, like, the sand is enough earth for this spell. So obviously the flowers are there just because he knew that she liked them, which is so sweet. Mm. And she, like, their smell is the first pleasure she's felt since she saw the Prince of Lust. So, like, it's so sweet. I am a big fan of him. After the bath, she goes back to the room, and he has cannolis and cards on her bed. And I'm like, that's my dream night. Like, just playing cards and eating cannolis. Sorry. Playing cannolis. Yeah.
Love it.
And, so they start playing cards, and he's super intense, which, like, nobody's surprised about, because this is another lesson he's teaching her, basically. He goes on about strategy and all of this shit, and she does actually think to herself, like, after the bath and all that, she does feel better, but she is more worried about the princes now, because, like, obviously he caught her off guard, like, that kind of shit.
Yeah.
She asks Wrath how long until Lust is back to full power, and Wrath says likely soon, but he won't bother her again because she'll stop him. And she's like, okay, how? And she's like, yeah. Are there spells or charms? But he says, like, they're not affected, and, like, there's nothing that she could do that would make him fear her. So he even says, like, he does not fear, he is fear. And, like, he's talking about, like, him and all of his brothers. And then he smiles at her, and she remembers again, like, what he is, because he is one of the princes, and, like, she keeps forgetting it, so do the readers, because he's being so sweet to her. But he tells her he believes he's powerful, and so he is. So she needs to do the same. She needs to trust in herself and her power, and make them second guess her. And she asks if...
I just, like, can I just say, I find that this, like, I appreciate the message, right? Like, believe in your own power. If you exude confidence, then maybe it'll make people second guess. But, like, I feel like against supernatural beings who can, like, read your emotions, influence them, and, like, can sort of, like, anticipate you, I feel like this, like, pretending to be confident and pretending you have more power than you do, I feel like that's not useful.
Yeah. Like,
you know what I mean? Like, I feel like I could not waltz up to a prince and be like, oh, I'm amazing, and then be like, sure you are. I agree. Yeah. Yes. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like they would see through that.
I do, like, he does give her more practical things in a second, but I am, like, just believing in yourself as a, like, baby witch isn't going to do much. Yeah. But yeah, he basically is like, oh, if you believe in yourself enough, they'll second guess you and won't think that you're easily fooled. And you're like, that's not, I guess that's, like, bluffing. Is that what he's trying to teach her? Because she's like, that's not going to work. But she does say, like, how can I learn all that through cards? And they're playing Scopa, and I'm not sure if it's a game. But he says, like, life deals you a hand, and you don't get to choose it. So he lays down a card and ends up getting a sweep, which I guess means he wins. And she says it's luck, not strategy, but he says it's both. But he also tells her that, like, power isn't good or evil. It's the intent that matters. And that not studying all magic is a poor strategy. So, like, that part I can get behind. Although I'm kind of like, didn't she use dark magic earlier that, like, you were just talking about it? And he was like, don't do that, your soul. So, like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Anyway, she basically says, like, her grandmother wouldn't agree. And he says, then maybe you should start asking questions. And I'm like, obviously we know the grandmother knows more than, you know.
Yeah.
He tells her then that she's ruled by fire and emotion, and she needs to learn to control it and also learn to read her enemies. And, like, he kind of said that earlier this week when you were like, she gave up everything because she was pissed. She told him everything she cared about.
Yes.
And he tells her the princes know to adapt, and that's why they're powerful. And she just...
Also, they have a shit ton of power.
They can make you feel whatever they, like, whatever their sin is. Like, obviously, yeah. And she's kind of getting done with it, too. She tells him he loves the sound of his voice and should let her teach him a wider range of emotions. And he says maybe one day he will, which I'm like...
So is that, like, suggestive? Like, is she getting sexy here?
I don't know. I don't think she was at that moment. But, like, after he says, after he answers with that, she's, like, starts to think back to the beach. So, like, I think she's like, oh, you're stone-faced and you don't feel enough. And that's why she said it. But then when he answered like that, she was, like, started thinking of the beach again and suggestiveness. Damn. So, like. And then she's like, he looks at her really intensely and she starts thinking of the beach and he tells her when she first stepped. So like she's thinking of the beach and then he starts talking about the beach like she hasn't brought it up. So like he's thinking about it, too. I'm like, just have sex already. but he tells her when she first stepped on the sand, she must have felt the demonic influence. And she did. She felt the fear immediately. And he says, being aware of it is the first step to fighting it, which is, like, fair. Like, she should, if she had realized in that moment, she might have been able to fight it off. He also tells her she could have walked away at any minute. And she asks if he's saying it's her fault. Which, like, yeah, like, consent. Obviously it's not.
Blaming the victim. That's
what she's thinking he's doing. But he says that he thinks she has untapped power. And I'm like, interesting. Why does he think that? But she just calls his brothers sadistic. And he says they're neither good or evil. They just are. And he asks why she doesn't include him in that statement of, like, his brothers are sadistic. And she says he hasn't done terrible things to her. But she also says it's likely because of the spell. And he tells her to practice reading people. And he tells her she always has a choice too, and that's power. And, like, it's funny because when he's like, you need to practice reading people, she's like, oh, he's pissed I said that. Because, like, we don't know all of the reasoning behind why he's acting like he is, but we assume that there's something else to it than just the spell.
Yeah, like, he chose to save her. If he really didn't like her, like, he could have just let her die by the Viperidae, whatever, demon, and then he would have been free of their betrothal. But he didn't do that. He saved her, meaning, like,
there has to be a reason. And anytime she's in danger, he's worried about her. Like, she can see that. But he said, like, you always have a choice. That's powerful. And then she gets angry because that is her primary emotion. And she asks if Victoria had a choice. And he responds that there are worse things than death. And he says, for one of them, living in his world. So, interesting. And then he tells her he's leaving and to check the bedside table if she's bored. And he suggests not leaving tonight. And then he's gone. And she thinks of, like, how he was super finely dressed. And she's like, I wonder where he's going. Like, what's going on? So, of course, she thinks of everything he said. And she gets stuck on the, like, you always have a choice, free will kind of thing. And with so much to do, she thinks to herself, why shouldn't she start back at it tonight now that she has some energy and stuff? So she gets ready to leave. And I'm like, why didn't you check the bedside table? I want to know what's in the bedside table now. Is it a vibrator?
Yeah.
I don't know. I know.
Be very convenient. I don't know what it
is. But of course, this is where we end on, obviously, a cliffhanger, as per the usual chapter endings.
Yes.
So yeah, that is it for this week. If you want to get in touch with us and share your thoughts on anything you heard in our episodes, or if you have any book suggestions, please reach out to us by email at coffeeandcoread@gmail.com or on Instagram or Facebook at coffeeandcoread and coffee.coread on TikTok.
So next week we will be reading chapters 37 to 48, aka the end of Kingdom of the Wicked. So make sure to follow along. And if you're enjoying our chats, don't forget to follow, rate, and review wherever you get our content. Thanks for listening, everyone, and we'll see you on the next page.